Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Golf Podcast presented by Golficity. We are going to be talking today about some strategies you can use to really pick smart targets and minimize your risk out there. And this is going to work itself really well into the conversation where we're going to talk about a video that's going to be coming out any day now where we played worst ball. That's right. Worst, not best ball. How about that experience, Mike?
Yeah, what a great experience. I mean, it was challenging. And when we jumped off that first tee, I think after four holes, I was not feeling it. But I'm sure we're going to talk a little more about that.
We had a grind. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, let's put it that way.
We had a grind. But other exciting news, I see you wearing some of the new FootJoy gear.
Yes. Loving it.
It's absolutely, you know, just perfect. I was impressed with the how much stuff came in, which I'm sure you guys saw in the video. If you didn't, though, our FootJoy giveaway is live, and we can't thank them enough for this because, honestly, you know, we said send us some stuff for Scotland. They just went overboard, sent us so much stuff, and then we said, you know, our motto, we always say when we get something, you guys get something. So we said, all right, we're going to need to do some sort of giveaway. Can you guys put something together? And we're figuring maybe they could do, like, you know, one winner, but they way up the ante. We've got five winners. We're going to give away five head-to-toe FootJoy outfits. Each one's valued over, I think, $240. I think the grand total is like $1,200 worth of FootJoy that we're giving away. So all of those details are going to be in the video, which you can see all of our videos, as always, on YouTube, on Facebook, as well as in the Golficity app. Remember, guys, the Golficity app is free, and there you'll get alerts whenever we drop a new video or podcast. So I highly recommend checking that out. Go to golficity.com/app to download it for iOS or Android. Speaking of giveaways, we've got our first winner in the ShotScope leaderboard, right?
I'm excited for this.
This is fun. So we're going to do this each month, and we're going to pick something different. If you're not already part of our leaderboard, it's free to join in the ShotScope app. Just use code GICITY to join, and we'll start one new one fresh every month. So the past month, over May, we did a points total. Right, Mike? That's how we did one. So whoever had the most points, and if you're new to ShotScope, they've got medals and points and things that you can earn while you're out there. So our winner for May is D. McGarry. That's McGary. Unfortunately, we don't know your first name because in the on the leaderboard, it only gives us first initial. But D. McGarry, handicap 7, total of 10 rounds played in May. Not bad at all. For a total score of 2,885 points earned. So, Well done.
Really cool. Congrats. And the prize, Frank, we're going to be sending you a dozen Pro V1s. So we're jumping out of the gate with a strong prize.
Love that prize. So if you're listening to this, make sure you reach out to us. We're going to try to get in touch with you. We reached out to ShotScope to see if we can get your contact info. Unfortunately, again, when it's things like this that we don't have much control over, we don't have really a way in that system to message you. So if you're listening to this, email us podcast@golficity.com so we can get in touch with you to get you your prize. And for the rest of you, we are going to be doing our next competition for the month of June. We're going after greens and regulation.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and that's something we talk about all the time about being so important. So let's incentivize a little bit. So get out there, work on making that your target, hit some greens and regulation, and make sure you're on the ShotScope Golficity leaderboard, and then we're going to see who tops that list at the end of June and give away another great prize. So look forward to that. Speaking of which, we're super excited about Scotland. We're going to be meeting up with the ShotScope team, playing a bunch of rounds with those guys out there. We have a total of 10 rounds in 6 days, which is so exciting to me. I don't think I've ever played that much golf.
Nope.
So you can bet that those ShotScope stats, they're going to pile up fast. And guys, if you're new to the show, the ShotScope V2, you hear us talk about it often, it's the world's smartest golf watch. What the V2 does, it offers fully automated shot tracking while you play, plus extremely accurate GPS to fairways, layups, hazards, front, middle, back of greens. You get everything on the watch while you're out there. There's no phone required. There's no tagging. You You've got the watch talks to your clubs. It knows what club you're hitting. It takes care of everything in the background, and you get a chance to win some prizes, some bragging rights. We've got the leaderboard here. So the way to get on that is to get a V2 and get involved. And their Father's Day special is still happening. The price is even lower. Amazing prices for the ShotScope. Honestly, to me, it's a no brainer. It costs less than you'd spend on just a regular GPS watch. Plus you get all this other stuff. So go to shotscope.com/golficity. Again, that's shotscope.com/golficity to make sure you get the best possible price. And we'll see everybody out there on the leaderboard.
Frank, I got to tell you, the ShotScope was key to our worst ball challenge.
It really was.
You know, because of the precision and, you know, when the water hit on the back nine, you know, you and I were talking about smart plays, layups.
Yep.
So it was helpful, man. But what do you think about worst ball? I mean, it was a unique experience.
Yes.
And something I don't think I would want to do again. Or maybe I do want to do again to maybe beat the last one. But what do you think?
Well, as with anything, it was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. It's going to tie into some of the stuff we're going to talk about in our instruction segment in a moment about picking smart targets. But to set it up for anybody who the video is going to be coming out any day now, but to give you guys a little bit of a backstory of how this works, you've probably heard of scramble best ball formats before. And the way that works is, and often we'll see these in like charity outings because not everybody in the group has to play well in order to have a good team score. So everybody hits a ball and whichever ball is best ball, everybody hits from there and so on and so forth. So we decided to do it the other way. Mike and I went out there with the goal of breaking 100, and we would each take a shot from each location. So let's say we start at the tee, we'd both tee off, and then we would determine which ball was worst out of the two. We would then move to that location, hit two more, whichever one was worst, and so on and so forth. I'll tell you what, much harder than it sounds. And yeah. And part of the reason was, and we talked about this a lot while we were out there, we were kind of like decompressing it, like what makes this so difficult. And I think it's, let's say I'm out there in a regular round that I hit a bad shot. There's a very good chance I can hit a really great recovery and recover from that. But here in this situation, both players, and if you did this with four people, I would imagine it only makes it that much harder, but both players have to hit a great recovery shot. And obviously each time you have a bad shot, it makes the next shot harder. So for example, if we both hit tee shots and one is on the fairway and the other one is in the rough, maybe blocked out by the trees, obviously that second shot is harder. So it makes it harder and harder to hit, hit greens and to score well because you're always having to recover. So what this does is it forced us to both play smart and to both make great shots because the pressure would be on. And really where the pressure was on is if one of us hit a great shot, the other guy wouldn't want to screw it up with a bad shot. So we talk in other ways about when you were practicing ways to simulate pressure. Well, this was a great way to do it, right?
Yeah, totally. And we got off to a pretty poor start. And I'm looking at the scorecard now. We went double bogey for the first four holes.
Yep.
And then we made our first par. And that was an impressive par. And I'll tease a little bit because I know the video probably might not be out yet. Might be coming out within a day or two of this podcast coming out. But we made a really remarkable recovery. We both missed the green. So in that scenario, you and I, in order to make par, you and I both had to stick a – what would you think that chip shot was? 30 yards?
Oh, yeah. It was no short chip shot.
Yeah. It was because it had to run a little bit. There was a slope to it. And you and I both put it to like 3 feet.
Yes.
And that just made it easy to par. We both had to make that 3-footer and we did. And then from that point on, I think we started clicking a little bit.
We did. And so we had some good holes and we played the back nine pretty well. Fair. But I'm not gonna give away whether we broke 100 or not.
Right.
I will tell you whether we did or we didn't, it was close. It was close to the number. But yeah, double bogeys would come easily because the other thing was you approach shots and things like that, you both had to put it in tight because let's say you left yourself a 10 footer. The chance of one of us making it is good, but the chance of us both draining a 10 footer is not terrific. Let's be honest. And that's what would happen. So we would get to the green. There were a couple occasions where, like, for instance, you made a putt and then I stepped up to it and I had to make it too. And talk about pressure. And if I missed it, that became our worst shot. And then we'd both have to go from there. So even 3 footers were a little bit knee knockers. while you were out there. But it really showed that the idea of, and it was kind of funny. We were doing it on the story while we were out there on Instagram and stuff. And a lot of people were DMing us and saying like, you can do it, just play conservative, because it's true. You'd have to be a little bit more conservative because of the fact, the compounding nature of a bad shot. But anyway, it was a terrific experience. I would say, if you're a little bit of a glutton for punishment and you've got, you know, a buddy, a golf buddy who you feel like your relationship is strong enough that you're not going to kill each other out there playing worse ball, give it a try, because it's at least a different way to approach the game, and you may find out some things about your game and your ability to play on a team that you may not have known about yourself previously.
Yeah, definitely an experience. And one little bit of advice, I think we started to learn this as we moved on. Carrying an extra ball in your pocket went a long way, right? Because, yeah, you know, you got to walk over and get your ball,
right?
You know, or go get it. And then that could be a 6-hour round. So you and I started to click with, you know, in that regard on how to get through the round a little bit better.
Yeah.
But yeah, we won't give it away.
I'll tell you what, one of the hardest parts though, were when we did both hit, you know, each hit a good shot and having to go pick it up.
Oh, that was
terrible. There was a couple times we had these great drives down the middle of the fairway, or we both had great approach shots.
The 10th hole approach shot, you stuck it to like 2 feet. Dude, you could use it.
I've been playing it over and over in my head. I think it's like one of my like top five all-time golf shots.
It was gorgeous.
And I had to pick it up.
It was a blind shot. You couldn't even see the green. You had it right to the number, man.
Right. It was just like, it would have been a tap in, I think, birdie, right? Because that one we were, yeah. And it was just like, we had to go pick it up.
Drop and stop. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and that was tough. You had to swallow your pride, but that's part of it too. It added more and more to the pressure. But it was a fun experience. I can't wait to see the final product of the video when it's out, and I can't wait to share it with you guys. It was fun, no doubt about it.
And I got to think best ball is going to be even more fun.
Yeah, so we are going to do it the other side of that coin, and we're going to play it 2-man best ball. See if we can shoot par break it. Yeah. Which I think we can do. I think we can do it.
We'll see.
But worst ball was a serious challenge. It was funny, the starter had no faith in us. He's like, I don't think you could do. And then he said, I should do a tournament like that, like out here. But then he rethought about it, and he thought it was going to be like a 7-hour round. Everybody's playing worst ball. That would be a
brutal day.
That would be a brutal day. But we did it. We moved. We made it happen. We got that round in. We got that round in under 5 hours, playing worst ball, chasing our worst balls around.
That's true. We did pretty well. We were chasing that with cameras in hand.
Yeah, yeah. So,
hey, if we could do it, you could do it. But anyway, to keep this one moving along, guys, I just wanted to see, if you haven't seen our ball fitting video, speaking of drop and stop, this video comes out. It dropped on May 31st. Go check it out. It was an eye-opening experience. I mean, it really was. I mean, what I've learned is that no matter what you accomplish today, to be your best requires dedication. I mean, I'm learning this as going through this process. It requires dedication, practice, finding a way to do it all over again and get better. I mean, I've been talking about this with my buddies a lot, Frank, and how when you go play golf, you want to play better every single time you go out. You don't want to be the same. So last week we had Michael Rich on the show. He was the manager of Golf Ball Fitting. And he said something that really stuck out. He said the golf ball is the only piece of equipment that you hit on every shot in every round. So I played a lot of golf balls over my years, from my quest down from a 22 handicap about 5 years ago. And honestly, no other golf ball has performed as well as the Titleist line of golf balls. So including the Pro V1, which Frank, you were just fitted for.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed really nicely on Friday. And the Pro V1X, which this ball fit my swing perfectly. You'll see that in the video. Both balls have long been celebrated as the most trusted, best performing golf balls in the world. You see it on TV all the time. Now we've made them, they've made them even better, evidence in our own game. I mean, we're seeing it firsthand. Because just like the best golfers on the planet, we know that to be number one, you have to stay number one. We have to be better than the last time out, like I just said. So the best players keep proving it, and you should too. Get fitted. Visit Titleist.com and search for a free fitting event near you.
Yes. So jumping into this strategy, I want to talk about smart targets today. I want to talk about minimizing risk. Another thing that's been top of mind for me, because I'm really trying, as I learn this game and as I work my way through it, like you said, Mike, always striving to get better. Mm-hmm. A big part of that for me has been trying to play smarter, to think my way around the course a little bit better. You and I have been fortunate enough that, especially recently, we've had some opportunities to play with some really great golfers. And sometimes what I'll try to do is kind of watch what they're doing, and not so much their swing, but watching their decision-making and their approach, and try to reverse engineer it and see what they're doing out there. And I start to realize more and more how the best golfers often tend to be the smartest golfers, the ones who don't just go up there and grip it and rip it with every shot. Excuse me. So we want to, a big part of that is playing each shot in a way that minimizes risk. And I think what I'm learning more and more about the game as I play it more and more is also you're really, and you hear this often, it sounds a little cliche, but you're not playing against each other. You're playing against the golf course. I it's not like basketball where we're one-on-one and I'm the defense. The defense is the course, and the course is set up to be defensive. It's not set up to just hand you pars. You're going to have different things that could get you in trouble out there, and some things that can get you in more trouble than others. Hazards being one of them, and things like that. And a good course designer is going to force you to think, is going to force you to play different types of shots. And you need to think. You need to think, do I have that shot in my bag? And if I don't, what's an alternate shot that I can hit? You know, some of the world's best players, they'll assess things and they'll say, okay, they need to hit, let's say, a high fade here or a low draw here. They may know how to hit those shots, and then it just comes down to execution. Depending on where you are in your progressive skill level, you may not have that shot. So even though that might be the right shot to play, it might not be the right shot for you to play. So you may have to think about, what's the second best shot that I can play here? What's one that is a higher percentage shot for me? So what we're going to talk about is different ways that you can be smarter with your targets. And we just want to move away from that general direction that I see a lot of newer golfers do, where they're so focused maybe on just their swing that they really don't think about strategy. And it's just kind of like this always aiming in the general direction of the fairway or the green and just kind of like letting it rip. But as, like I said, as you progress and as you play the game more, you'll start to see kind of the beauty is the thinking, and the way that you approach it can vary. So, you know, an example might be, let's say, you know, there's a difference between picking a target and what we're going to say here is smart target. So for example, let's say you aim directly at a flag on a given approach shot, even though you're 200 yards away, it's a windy day, the hole is cut, you know, just steps from a water hazard. That's an example of picking a target, but not necessarily a smart one. The goal with that target selection is going to come down to giving yourself opportunities to make birdies and pars while minimizing that risk. And what we learned when we did worst ball was exactly that. We were both trying to not hurt our combined score. So we were trying to stay away from areas that are going to quickly hurt you. So in the first part, in the first, I guess, point we have here of picking smart targets is realizing that penalty strokes are your enemy. And that might be something that you've generally realized, but like sometimes it just takes a matter of really letting that sink in. And the average golfer could really benefit from shifting to a focus from always the focus being make par and make birdie, maybe start to shift the focus away and just start to think, avoid penalties. What ways can I play that makes me avoid penalties? And if you can prioritize that avoidance of penalty strokes, you might be surprised how much your average score will improve. And certain courses are going to test you more than others. For example, when I played the Ocean Course, right? This is my, again, you hear Frank's talking about the Ocean Course again, but it was so true. The example being, that place is, you know, lousy with hazards. There's hazards everywhere, right? So it really forces you to pick smart targets. I mean, we're talking, there were greens that, you know, if the pin was, like, there's one green I remember that was, there was water, just there was no even fringe. It just went from green to like water. And it was just like that. If that pin was on the right side by the water, there was really no real margin for error. So that's where you're forced even more importantly to pick smart targets. So it's an important target. It forces you to make decisions about target selection. So if your focus is on avoiding penalties, you're going to be reluctant to aim near hazards. And you might, you know, that in and of itself might add a little bit to your score, but it's going to avoid those really big blow-up holes.
Right. And I'm now thinking back to the worst ball experience. My head is on the I'm on the seventh hole. It was a short par four. I think it was like 295 yards. I remember the whole left side was white stakes. And you said to me, because you've never played there, you said to me, you go, what's on the right? And I said, it's another fairway, possibly over the street, if you go even further. So we instantly ruled out driver.
Yeah.
And you and I both hit seven irons right down the middle of the fairway. You were on the left. I was on the right. And I think one of us stuck the green. I mean, so I think back to that hole, and it's boring golf, but that's the golf I really want to learn to teach myself. Because you're right, penalty strokes are your enemy. Penalty strokes are the quickest way for your score to add up. It's also the quickest way for your mental game to blow up.
Yes.
Because if you go, you know, OB off the tee and you're hitting three, as a 12 handicapper, I'll be honest, I'm not getting out of there with any better than double bogey in that scenario. And at that point, that's where the game can go out of order. I don't want double bogeys on the scorecard. I'm trying to improve. I'm trying to have fives, fours, threes on my scorecard, not sixes and higher.
Right.
So this is a huge one. I got to learn how to play that boring golf that we keep trying to do, which you're kind of like hinting at towards, but it's so true.
Yeah, but I want to like rebrand it because
I know. Can we rebrand
There's nothing, trust me, there's nothing boring about writing pars on that card. That's for sure. But yeah, I mean, I remember back to that because that where we played best ball is a course that you've played often and I had never played it. So I remember stepping up to every tee. I think I asked you the same question. I'm like, where can I get hurt on this hole? What's going to hurt me here? And that's what I try to do. And I try to think about ways that I can avoid that. So it might just be, and it doesn't have to be dramatic. It doesn't always have to be put the driver away. I know that's an example we use often, but it might just be something as simple as aiming towards the safer side of the fairway or say the safer side of the green, just to take certain things out of play. And knowing your shot shape is part of that. There's a lot of different types of things, but I just want to get away from the mindset of always aiming directly at the hole and not realizing the nearby threats. And also threats that change things are that the environment that day, there might be more wind that make you have to be choose targets that are even less aggressive. Those types of things. So you gotta keep that in mind. So and I think a good example would be going back to that one example of that hole that I was, and I don't remember which hole it was, but at Kiwa, where the pin was on the right side and then it was immediate trouble all to the right. It might be just a matter of the smart target might just be making the left side of the green my target rather than the pin. Because if I make that pin my target, there was zero margin for error to the right side. And I still remember that shot because I put it in the water and I felt like I hit a great shot. It just, the way the wind was blowing from left to right and with a slight fade on that ball, it didn't take much of an error to be in the water. If it was any other course, I probably would have been in a greenside bunker or a chip from the fringe, but there was no margin for error. There's a hazard there. So my smarter play would have been to play towards the left side of the green. Now, granted, again, it's not like you're going to be going super low when you play. Depending, like the more and more conservative you play, the harder and harder it's going to be to score. So for instance, let's say I executed that shot aiming for the left side of the green. I end up on the left side of the green and I've got a 30-foot putt. You know, right there, I know I'm not getting out of there with a one putt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So may add an extra stroke to my score there, two putt it and get out of there with like a bogey or whatever. But it's a lot better than putting it in the water and then having to take a penalty, a drop, a chip, and still possibly two more putts. And that's where it starts to add up quick.
Mm-hmm.
So that's so important. Another thing to consider is the length of the shot is so crucial. I think a good thing to reference this or liken this to is on the putting surface where we talk about speed being more important than anything else. Length can be very important too. So you've got to be able to evaluate and think about your accuracy from different distances. Obviously, you're going to be a lot more accurate from 100 yards than you're going to be from 200 yards. So you may want to take a more aggressive line with a wedge in your hands as opposed to your four iron. You know, I still remember Kevin Sprecher telling us, he's like, listen, your driver is your least accurate club. That's why the fairways are so wide. And that's why the, you know, greens are a smaller target than a fairway. But it's true. So I think oftentimes we can get into this mindset, this simpler mindset where we're just like, we take the same degree of aggression or conservatism with every club. But you need to start to think like, well, I need to be a little bit less aggressive with my longer clubs because there's a longer distance, a longer, bigger margin of error, possible error. So you just need to think each shot through, evaluate where you're likely to succeed. Plus, this can be a very individualized thing too. Different players know that they are more comfortable or less with different clubs. I mean, I'm speaking generally here, but knowing yourself too and knowing your own game can help. So when you have those longer shots, thinking back to the length, you have those longer shot, playing it safe is usually the better way to go. As you get closer to the green, you can get a little bit more and more aggressive. And that's the truth. I would get more aggressive with my approach shot with a wedge than I would with a 7-iron.
Sure.
Having to cover 165 yards with a 7-iron, that's where I may say pin is tucked in the back right. I'm going to aim a little bit further and further away from that, you know, towards the center or the left side of the green, versus with a wedge, I might get a little bit closer towards aiming for that pin.
No, it makes total sense.
Yeah. And also as part of that is knowing your ball flight. And that's what...
That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. And you know, look, it's another point that Kevin had said with driving lanes, right? So mm-hmm. he said, for example, let's say you take a guy like me that I know I curve the ball from right to left. I draw the ball, right? So let's say there's water heading down the right side. He had said, thinking driving lanes, start the tee shot on the right side, knowing that you're going to curve, you know, away from that water and moving away from it. And then the opposite might be true mm-hmm. of you playing a fade. So now you're gonna aim further to the left, knowing you as it fades, you're not gonna fade it too close and start to flirt with that water. But again, this comes down to knowing your game. I think a lot of us often try so hard to change our game and hit different shots versus just really honing in on what's my game, what's my shot, natural shot shape like, and then working that into your decision. So as you pick a target for a given shot, think about the ball flight. And also think about the ways that that could get you in trouble too. Like there's tree lines sometimes. And is that going to interfere with your ball flight? And that's what I was saying before. Sometimes you might be on the right side next to a tree line and the pin is like a little bit of a dogleg right. Mm-hmm. So you may think, well, the correct play here is a fade. But then you got to think, is that a shot in my arsenal? Don't set yourself up for disaster and trying to play something that you can't play. In which case, it might be smarter play to, instead of going like 7-iron at high 7-iron fade and try to hit the green, maybe going wedge or something like that. But if as long as you can't, in other words, what I'm driving at is you can't make a good decision until you really know what you have to work with.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes you just got to rethink that plan. If your particular ball flight doesn't really give you access to the target, don't just try to force it. Don't try to force a square peg into a round hole, right?
Right, right. Don't be like me sometimes and say, I got this high draw in my bag when I know I don't.
Right.
But no, you're absolutely right. And that's what I do with my fade. I have the weirdest memory. I'm thinking about the 10th hole during YouTube Golf Day that had that water on the left. And I remember turning my entire body to aim directly at that water. And then I ended up crushing it to like maybe 10 yards off the green, right in front, right in the middle of the fairway, chipped it up and I made par. So, dude, I do it all the time. Spreck, one of his best lines was driving lanes. I still think about it every time I'm up there.
So, you know, and you can carry that out and think about it other places, just the tee box. You know, just think about, I think so many times we think about like where we are and where we want the ball to be, but we don't necessarily think about what's going to happen between points A and B. And mm-hmm. I think if you think about it and try to, and I like to do a lot of visualization. I think it's a good practice to visualize your shot, but I think not only for the performance, I think when you visualize it, it helps your body replicate what you want it to do. But I also think like visualizing it, you can kind of see, you know, as that ball flies through the air, where other places might it get in trouble.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
It's almost like picturing like a shot tracer. You know,
yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
It's a good way to do it. Another thing is, this is a real key. Don't stretch your carry distance, you know, always to its max. Sometimes the job of picking the target just comes down to deciding if you're going to attempt to carry a hazard or lay it up short. And when you're faced with that situation, remember, there's a difference between how far you can hit the ball and how far you should attempt to hit the ball. And remember, and we'll talk about pressure in a minute because pressure also plays a role into this, but oftentimes when we are at a carry distance that's kind of our max, we realize, yeah, maybe you can carry that distance, but how often do you hit that perfect shot that allows you to do that? And again, as we slide up that scale to higher and higher handicaps, you maybe pull that shot off less and less. So for example, let's say I'm faced with a 230 yard carry, right? Or I could possibly lay it up. Now I know that I can carry that distance with my three wood, possibly with my hybrid, but I also know that those two are not my best clubs, and I may carry that distance well 5 out of 10 shots. Mm-hmm. For other people, it might be 3 out of 10 shots. For really good golfers, it might be 9 or 10 out of 10 shots. That's, again, where it comes down to knowing yourself. But again, it's don't always try to max it out. A lot of times we just think about what our performance is on our best executed shots, but knowing that sometimes you don't always have that shot. And a good example of this was when we played Mansion Ridge. Remember that one par five, right? Where I kind of like talked all the way through it. So I had the driver and I had a great drive, but it still set me up. I knew I couldn't reach the green in two. So I'm just looking at how do I want to set up my third shot? And there's that ravine that was out there. I think the ravine was out like 180 or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was a 200 carry. And if I landed on the other side of that ravine, carried it perfectly, and again, it's a tighter target because it's all in the trying to keep it in the fairway, I would leave myself maybe a 70-yard shot out versus leaving it short of the ravine, and I would leave myself maybe 150 out. Mm-hmm. I ended up going with that shot because it was the much smarter play. Talk about smart targets. If I had tried to stretch it out and carry the 200, first of all, I bring that hazard into play. So there is a chance that I don't catch it flush or something happens and I don't carry it. Right there, you're introducing the chance of a penalty stroke, right? Worst case on a layup, let's say I mishit a layup. I'm laying up with a club that doesn't give me the distance to reach that hazard. So no matter what, I've taken that hazard out. So Worst mm-hmm. case, if I come up way shorter than expected, I just have a longer approach shot in. Versus the worst, like I look at one worst case versus the other worst case. Worst case on a go for it is in a hazard, penalty stroke, dropping, and all that other stuff that comes up with it. Worst case with a layup is I don't perfectly execute my layup shot. I leave myself a little bit more distance than I wanted to leave myself.
So, smart golf, we're going to call it. We're going to rebrand it.
Rebrand it. Not boring golf, smart golf.
Smart golf. And I remember, and this is one of the many reasons why I love videoing all our rounds and watching them back, because I remember what you did on that hole. You did put the ball on the green. You had that one for that back of the green. You messed up that first putt. You got a little nervous coming down
that hill. I did three putt it, and I got out of there with a bogey, but it was also – well, it was also an incredible two-tier green, and I tried to just stop it at the top of that tier and let it trickle down. And unfortunately, I stopped it probably 6 inches short, and it just checked. But I played it well up to that point. At the end of the day, I can't kick myself going out of that hole. I can think like, okay, I can execute that putt better next time, but I'm not kicking my decision-making. And I think that's where we got to like split the two. I would rather be down on myself for not executing the shot than making a dumb decision. Because if I didn't execute the shot, I can say, all right, I can go back. I can learn that. I can practice that. I can get better at that. But a dumb decision, I got no one to blame because I had the tools I needed to make the right decision. The shot, maybe I didn't. Maybe I needed more practice. But that's where, again, you can often... by just not stretching out your carry distance and playing a little bit smarter. I think too many times, and I spent too much time myself with this mindset that always on every shot, just try to advance the ball as far as I could towards that green versus thinking the other way of thinking, okay, what's the safest play I can play here that still gives me enough distance to score? It's just that slight tweak in your logic. And it really, it does help. It does help on the scorecard. That's for sure.
Yeah, I just would love to be able to play a whole round like that. I guess I would need to play with you and you telling me on every hole, like, dude, put the driver away, put that away, do that. No, don't do that. That's just what I need. I'd love to actually play a full 18, you know, with hitting more irons off the tee and stuff that, you know, that I'm not comfortable with. If there is a par five that goes dogleg left and I have a slice, play the smarter shot. Do things like that. The problem for me, and we go back to the 18th hole in worst ball, I would always hit driver there. Mm-hmm. Always. And I did mess up the first couple shots there because I went with a club I normally wouldn't use there. It was a short par four. It went dogleg left, and I do have that fade, but I would play the slice to take a lot of that junk or trap or hill out of play. Just get it up there on that top tier, even if it's to the right side. But I totally get it.
That's a dynamic too. Like, don't forget, like, I don't say just put the driver away just because it's a less accurate club. Like something can be said for when you put it away and you're so confident and used to hitting that club. Now you're giving yourself something you're not used to hitting and you know, but I think it's more so the target that's got to be important. If you got a driver in your hands and I'm saying that it's bringing a whole lot of trouble into play, whereas putting it away might take some of that trouble out of play. That's right. The important thing. If the fairway narrows a bunch or there's OB or water up there in your landing zone and you can say, if I just hit a 3-wood or a hybrid here, I take all that out of play because I can't reach it, that's a smart decision to me.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I remember what you said to me when I got up there. You go, you said, well, it's only 200. I pulled driver out. You're like, well, it's only 200 to the top of the hill. And I said, all right. So I switched to 5-iron. A club I'm less confident with. I'm not blaming you because I should have been able to hit that at least up the hill. But yeah, I totally get it. You know, it's a solid approach.
You know what? I don't want to give away too much, but we did play that last hole, and that last hole got us in trouble. We did play it a little too conservative, and that's problem. You know, that's like in football, like hearing footsteps. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we play. And I've seen this, you see this happen in every level of professional sports where someone is playing well and then they just don't want to screw it up and they go away from their normal game plan. Mm-hmm. And I think we were too worried about the number on the scorecard and not the hole itself.
Yeah, you nailed
and they were
it.
Just like, mm-hmm. let's just get so hyper conservative. I think if 18 was hole one, we both would have hit driver there. I think there the scorecard came too much into play. And it made us change our decision. I think that's a really important actually point to bring up here. When I say smart targets, I mean for the hole and for the play, not for what your scorecard is in that moment. Because we were just playing. At that point we switched to defense and we were just trying not to screw it up.
You're absolutely right. It's a good point because for you, that's a beautiful driver hole for you.
Yeah, I mean, driver and you should have hit driver.
Yeah,
and we didn't just because we tried to play like. We worked our way backwards and we thought like we could just hit pitching wedges all the way in and whatever. It was, you know what I mean? Like we overthought it and we totally did.
And that's what happened.
That's a lesson learned there too. The last point here about picking smart targets is not to forget. And this is something in general, just to know about your golf game, just the realization of how much pressure plays a role into everything. And that's part of why we did worst ball. We want to simulate that pressure because otherwise you have situations like when we played in YouTube Golf Day, there was a ton of pressure that day. And I realized I did not perform as well as I would have liked. So it's more so getting out there and understanding the pressure and understanding what it does to your golf game. And you just need to start to realize that the reality is you should expect to be more accurate with your shots when you're relaxed and comfortable than when you're nervous. So if you're playing in a competition, if you find yourself feeling pressure that you wouldn't normally feel, that's a good time to say, wait, let me stop. Let me pick some safer targets. It's like that example I gave earlier where I may make this shot 5 out of 10 times. Well, under extreme pressure, I may make that shot 3 out of 10 times. So I may want to get, you know, even smarter with my targets. So again, it comes down to like knowing yourself, knowing your game. And I think by experiencing pressure, you'll be more aware of it when it's happening. And then I think it's just a matter of just not just trying to like, you know, being like a bull and just putting your head down and just driving through it, but more so like realizing it, like that's pressure. Okay, maybe I'll just pick a little bit more conservative play. I'm a little bit nervous here, which is going to hurt my chances of executing. I think that's important things. Then once you start to settle into a rhythm, you might notice your nerves start to fade away and you can go back to your usual and possibly more aggressive target selection. But that's important. And that's, I think, too, why oftentimes we say when we have really bad rounds, it just keeps getting worse and worse. It's because we're putting more and more pressure on ourselves. We're starting to add that score up in our head and be like, oh my God, this is going to be an embarrassing round. And we put more and more pressure and then we tend to just, you know, get more and more aggressive when maybe we should go the other way. You know, pick a little bit smarter targets for one or two holes until you settle back in. you know, and once you start to groove your rhythm again, instead of being like a snowball rolling downhill, just getting worse and worse, bigger and bigger, you know, pump the brakes by just being a little bit more conservative on one or two holes. It doesn't have to be the entire round. And then when you settle into a rhythm, you start to feel better again. You start to pick your score back up. Maybe then you start to get a little bit more aggressive. And but ebb and flow, like it's not like an on-off switch. It's not binary. It's something that you've got to be thinking the whole time out there. It's like chess, you know? You got to be smart. Yeah. You got to be smart when you're playing. So look, there's a lot of non-physical skills that you need to possess in order to play golf. Target selection is near the top of that list. But I think that's a good thing, because I think a lot of us, especially newer young, like golfers or people who are starting to get into the game, they get a little bit discouraged by the physical, you know, skills required, and they know they're still a little bit ways off. But this is where you can start to improve your game very quickly just by improving on these mental skills. And one of those is just getting the discipline and getting the experience and the thought process to pick smarter targets that minimize that risk, that take certain things out of play, that take hazards out of play, that take the areas where you can get really hurt out of play. And then you can find yourself with more of a margin of error. And again, like if you're a higher handicapper, you might need even a larger margin of error, but know That's your true. Game, know mm-hmm. your game, and you'll be able to score better with the game you currently have. And if you think a little more carefully about targets, you can use those during your next round, and it should reward you with the effort. So try it. Try it. If you do nothing else, just on your next round, if you just bring a little bit of more of awareness of your targets into play and see how it does for you. Be a little bit more, rather than just always firing away at, you know, driver, it's like, where's the fairway? Where's the middle of the fairway? That's my target. And then where the next shot, where's the pin? That's my target. Get away from that for a second and start to just like more assess where you can get in trouble. Look at the golf courses and its defenses and try to be smarter than the course.
Sounds brilliant, man.
And then that's the way that you'll enjoy it too, because you'll enjoy that thought process. Trust me.
Yeah.
It becomes a fun part of the game rather than a burden.
This is very timely, man, because I want to shoot really well in Scotland. So
yeah, I know. Me too.
You know?
Me too. And then there's pressure. Think about it. Even a golf trip. It could be any golf trip. You want to play well. And then too many of us like, I spent so much money on this golf trip. I wanted to ruin it with a bad golf game. But that's where you say, like, realize, okay, this is not my usual Saturday round at my home course. You know, there's things riding on this. I'm going to be upset if I know, like, again, it's realizing, taking a mental inventory of yourself and being like, it's going to upset me more because of the fact that this is a trip that I paid a lot of money for and I'm only here once. And then you realize, okay, all that translates to what? Pressure. So maybe just be a little bit less aggressive than you would on your normal Saturday morning round at your local muni.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it.
So give it a try. As I always say here on the podcast, let us know, you know, post your thoughts, post your experiences, post your pictures, post your videos, post them all on the Facebook group. We've got the free Facebook group. It's just a terrific group. And I have a lot of fun chatting with everybody in there throughout the week. But let us know, share your experiences with this. And even maybe share one or two of your, own thing, like what would you do's. You know, I like those too. I like when people like post a picture when they're out there and be like, this is where what I'm faced with. What would you hit? And that's not going to be the same answer for everybody.
That's true.
But it's always fun to think it through. It really is. So that's everything we have. Make sure you get to the show notes by going to golfissy.com/episode274. You can get every episode back to number one for free in the Golfissity app. You can download the Golfissity app by going to golfissity.com/app. You'll have the links there for Android and iOS. It is 100% free. And we've got some great stuff in there. A lot of fun golf content, stuff that we enjoy putting out there for you guys. So check it out, and we'll see everybody again next week.